Land Use to order as a subcommittee. We've got two public hearings today, and we're going to introduce some committee bills. The first one, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 431 and call forward Randy Tucker. Oh, and Dick Benner. You guys are sharing the same line. That's nice. Thank you very much. It's saving paper.
Resource.
Great.
Efficient.
Great. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. And
the rest of me?
Yeah. And Mr. Shields. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. Senate Bill 431 was introduced at Metro's suggestion, request. And so I've brought one of our staff attorneys, Dick Benner, along to explain the impetus behind it.
Impetus?
Sure.
Or the purpose?
The driving theme.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm Dick Benner at Metro. I'm talking about this from two different perspectives. First, as a lawyer who practices local government law and representing an agency that is currently in periodic review. And secondly, as a member of the Interim Periodic Review Committee that was established by your legislation from last session, that's Senate Bill 920, that establishes this committee and asks the committee to do an evaluation of periodic review and make recommendations back to you about how it might be improved. First of all, my experience as an attorney for a local government lawyer, here's the problem that we're facing. Metro is in periodic review. It could be any local government in periodic review. In our periodic review, we have a number of work tasks we have to accomplish according to our work program. And they involved, ours at least, involved a series of decisions. When we finished those decisions, we, as the periodic review statute requires, we submit them to LCDC. LCDC reviews them, and if there is to be an appeal of LCDC's decision, it goes to the Court of Appeals. When we made those decisions, not only did we submit them to LCDC, people who are unhappy with the decisions that we made also appealed them to LUBA. The result is that we're in two forums with the same set of decisions. So we, or any local government in periodic review, has to defend the decisions both at LCDC in periodic review and perhaps ultimately in the Court of Appeals, and may have to be defending the decisions at LUBA and once again ultimately at the Court of Appeals. It struck us, struck me of course, as being very wasteful. Two forums, same set of decisions, two possible appeals, two possibly different decisions getting to the Court of Appeals at different times. Wasteful of resources of everybody, wasteful of the Court of Appeals resources, LUBA's resources, LCDC's resources, our resources, the petitioner's resources. Just generally a bad idea. We thought that the problem was resolved by legislation some time ago, but it was not, and that's really the purpose of this bill. What this bill would do is to say that if a set of decisions is going to LCDC in periodic review, then those decisions cannot be appealed to LUBA. So if you're interested in those decisions, you want to participate in the review, you want to criticize them before LCDC, you do that in front of LCDC. And then if you want to appeal, you go to the Court of Appeals so that the local government defends the decision only at LCDC and the Court of Appeals and only does so once. So if you look at the language here in Section 1, It is the change is in 197.825. That's the section that describes LUBA's jurisdiction. And if you go down to the bold language in subsection 2C, it speaks more clearly that matters, and I'll just read starting on line 17. This is, the jurisdiction of LUBA does not include matters related to a local government decision that must be submitted to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, or LCDC, for acknowledgement under, and then it gives you a string of statutes, and that includes the acknowledgement process and the periodic review process. So the intended effect of this language would be, as I described, that if a local government is making land use decisions that are part of their periodic review and they get submitted to the agency, then that's where the game would be. That would be the forum. The matters would be heard there. LCDC would decide them, and then they would go up to the Court of Appeals. In my service on the Interim Periodic Review Committee, we've been meeting for, I think, about a year, or at least the better part of a year. We're not finished with our work, so there is no final report yet. But we are drawing our work to a close. We're beginning to hone in on a set of recommendations. This is one of the recommendations that the Periodic Review Interim Committee would make to you in order to make the periodic review process better, less expensive, less cumbersome, etc. Now let me address one of the criticisms that has been aired in opposition to this idea. And I can use Metro as an example. The way the law is today, the way this language in front of you unamended is interpreted, is that LCDC has, in periodic review, LCDC has jurisdiction over certain things but not others. It has jurisdiction over, if somebody thinks that a metro decision violated a statewide planning goal, that goes to LCDC. If Metro thinks that, excuse me, if a citizen thinks that a metro decision in periodic review violated some other statute, that would go to the Land Use Board of Appeals. So hence you go to the two different forums. So a criticism about this is, suppose somebody has a beef with what the local government did, and it doesn't involve the statewide planning goals, what competence does LCDC have to resolve that question? And our answer to that is, LCDC has the advice of the Attorney General's office on any matter that comes before it. And then if you're unhappy with the way that LCDC resolves that question, you can appeal it to the Court of Appeals, which is where you ultimately go anyway. So it seems that in trying to evaluate the balance here about saving resources and time and burdens on people, it's better to have the whole thing go to LCDC and have LCDC decide every issue that's related to those decisions, and then have a single appeal to the Court of Appeals. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about the idea or the language of the bill.
A couple quick questions. Make my notes here. So I can understand the reason why. Let me ask you the easy one first. You said there was an interim work group on periodic review, and they would recommend this if they could. When can they make a recommendation?
We've probably got one more meeting.
Okay, so you're almost
before done. We can wind things up, and we are drafting the report now, so it should be to you with probably early March, I would guess.
And in that will be legislative.
I'm pretty certain. Okay. It's one of the draft recommendations, but we have to wait until it's
okay.
Completed.
I appreciate that. I guess I smile or grimace just a little bit with your first couple paragraphs in your testimony when you're saying it's really a pain, essentially, for local government to have to go to two different parts, two different governing bodies to do an appeal. Not because I don't believe that's not legitimate, but because that's what Oregonians face who try to tangle in the land use system all the time. They don't know if they got to go to city council. They don't know if they got to go to county commission. They don't know if they go to what's an LCDC and what's LUBA, and then what's the Court of Appeals. I guess I have some concerns making it easier for local government, which is a good thing to do, but if we're not going to make it easier for real people. And what I mean by that is that I can tell you multiple times in cases in Southern Oregon where people who don't have lobbyists or belong to any organization do not know where to turn. They go to the city. I say this all the time, like once a week. They go to the city and they get one answer. They go to the county and get another answer. They go to LCDC and get something all different. And then the LCDC says, well, just use the exception process, which nobody in their right mind would do if they really had to pay their own lawyer bill. So I guess that's more of a comment. You know, I gristle a little bit if we're going to always make it easier for government around here, but not for real people.
Can
that's my concern.
To that?
Certainly.
Happily, if you make it easier for local governments, in this instance, you're also making it easier for people. Let me give you an example. If you're the participant, if you're a resident, if you're a citizen, and you don't like what the local government is doing, it's part of a periodic review decision. The law today is not clear whether you can get your complaint heard at LCDC or at LUBA. So your lawyer, probably in order to avoid malpractice, has to file in both places, has to participate in both proceedings to protect your interest. If you could pass this bill and clarify that it only goes one way, you're also performing a service for that citizen who doesn't have to pay the attorney to go to two different places.
Very good. That's very good. Senator Shields, you have a question?
No, just enjoying the repartee.
That was good. I will admit, that was great. All right, thank you very much. No further questions from the committee. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
It's good. Anybody else would like to testify on Senate Bill 431? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 431.
We have a quorum.
We need one more. Before we get to Senate Bill, the next one, do I need to open a works?
Open a work session for.
I will open a work session for an introduction of LC drafts. Will you please explain what they are?
We have a list of 9 LC drafts, and if there's no objection, Mr. Chairman, I'll just read the numbers and the relating clauses really fast. We have LC 1524 relating to animals at the request of the Oregon Spay and Neuter Task Force, LC 1655 relating to the State Board of Forestry, LC 1931 relating to water right cancellation at the request of Water for Life Incorporated, LC 2005 relating to water quality, LC 2149 relating to water, LC 2195 relating to water, LC 2196 relating to wildlife, LC 2197 relating to wildlife, LC 2200 relating to land use, and I see now, looking closely, that should be LC 2194, not LC 2149 that's relating to water. And those are all requested by various parties for introduction as committee bills.
Okay, is there any further questions on that, Senators?
You listed a couple of them who they were requested by. Do you have a list of all of them who they were requested by?
LC, the last 5 are all at the request of the chair. And
1655 in particular, Kevin, who that was requested
let
by?
Let me check really fast if we have that here. I do not think I have the answer with me. I can get that for you. And we can hold off on that one until later if you want.
No, but again, I'm just kind of curious. Just looking at it, the way I read that, if we pass this, there would be no one in the state who could qualify to serve on the Board of Forestry anymore.
Which one is this one? That's
one way to do it. I move the introduction of zoning measures.
Senator Byers moved the introduction of all these LC measures. recognizing that by introducing them as committee bills, Senator Beyer, Senator Atkinson, Senator Shields in no way lend their support to them. It's an administrative function that is new to this committee. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session on introduction of committee bills. Open a work session on Senate Bill 432. Staff, please present the bill. Close the work session. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 432.
In public hearings, isn't this just information meeting?
It says public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have an informational hearing on Senate Bill 432. This bill would abolish the Land Use Board of Appeals and create a Land Use Court of Appeals to assume the duties of LUBA. It specifies the Land Use Court of Appeals is made up of a three-judge panel and is within the judicial branch. One of the main effects of this is that under current law, decisions of LUBA are appealed to the Court of Appeals, and that's a non-discretionary review process by the Court of Appeals, and then maybe further appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court. Under the bill, you would essentially cut the first step out of that process, and the Land Use Court of Appeals would take over LUBA's function, and decisions of the Land Use Court of Appeals would be appealed directly to the Oregon Supreme Court.
Thank you. I'd like to first call forward Ross Day of Oregonians in Action.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Ross Day, Director of Legal Affairs at Oregonians in Action. And before you today, you have Senate Bill 432, which I don't know that I'd say abolishes. I'd say more it transfers the functions of the Land Use Board of Appeals, but maybe that's just semantics.
Fair enough.
Some of the people you'll probably hear from today are going to describe Senate Bill 432 as an attack on the Land Use Board of Appeals by those crazy guys who also wrote that Measure 37 thing that everyone keeps griping about. Let me assure you, right off the bat, that nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, Oregonians in Action believes that the Land Use Board of Appeals, as it's currently constructed, is doing an outstanding job. Given the resources they have, their ability not only to generate opinions, but also to provide the reporter that they do with the head notes and handle all of the motions and orders that they do, I think is nothing short of amazing. And for the most part, you know, we haven't had any big gripes with any of the decisions, frankly, that they've come out with. We think that on the whole, they're doing a very good job. Of course, I'm not just saying that because Chair Holston's in the back either, so, and I have a couple appeals pending. But anyways, now Senate 432 is actually intended to recognize what LUBA actually does. LUBA is an adjudicatory body, and it places LUBA where it belongs, in the judiciary. What does Senate Bill 432 do? As stated earlier, Senate Bill 432 moves LUBA under Article 7 of the Oregon Constitution where it belongs, with the rest of Oregon's courts. LUBA performs primarily, actually only as a judicial function. Everything that LUBA does, with the exception of adopting its own rules of procedures and operation, is consistent with the functions and services performed by Article 7 courts. LUBA presents opinions, publishes a reporter, hears motions, and issues orders. What effect will Senate Bill 432 have on the current process? There are three results that will come about from the passage of Senate Bill 432: accountability, efficiency, and judicial economy. Accountability. Right now, LUBA judges are appointed by the governor. Senate Bill 432 will allow the voters of Oregon to select the LUBA judges who right now make decisions that have tremendous impacts on Oregon's communities, thus giving the citizens of Oregon a voice in this arena, consistent with Oregon's tradition of electing judges. Efficiency. By moving LUBA into the judiciary, the Article 7 standing requirements will apply. Currently, the standing requirements for an appeal to LUBA are so broad that an interest group in Portland or Tigard can have standing to appeal a non-farm dwelling decision in Lakeview simply by sending a letter to the local government. Consistent with the governor's call to make the permitting process in Oregon more responsive and user-friendly, Senate Bill 432 would speed up the land use process by weeding out appeals filed merely for the purposes of delay, saving money for cities and counties, not to mention those property owners who get to pay those lawyer fees, while guaranteeing those persons who are truly affected by the decisions of the local government an opportunity to file an appeal themselves. You're probably going to hear that this is nothing more than an attempt to circumvent goal one of the statewide land use plan goals. Nothing could be further from the truth. What this is meant to do is to guarantee that those folks who are truly affected by a land use decision are the ones who get to have their voice heard, and they get to have their voice heard quickly. And we get a decision that the cities, counties, that the property owners, and that the appellants can rely upon. And finally, judicial economy. Currently, a land use appeal goes first to LUBA, then to the Court of Appeals, and if you're lucky, then to the Supreme Court, or maybe if you're unlucky, to the Supreme Court. Senate Bill 432 saves time and resources for the Oregon Court of Appeals by removing from their docket the appeals that come from LUBA. Appeals will go from LUBA directly to the Supreme Court. As I noted in my written comments, the bulk of the appellate work in this state is done by the Court of Appeals. I don't think it'd be asking too much to ask the Oregon Supreme Court to shoulder some of the work. That's kind of the policy decisions, the policy implications of Senate Bill 432. But of course, we also have to consider, I guess, the politics of the measure, the winners and losers. I'm sure you'll hear a little bit later that LUBA was created in 1979 with the passage of Senate Bill 435. The purpose of creating LUBA was to relieve the backlog of cases pending at the Court of Appeals. Since its creation, there really hasn't been a lot of significant changes to LUBA, a couple of tweaks and plucks, but nothing out of the ordinary. In 2001, Senate Bill 863 was introduced at the request of Oregonians in Action, but given the politics of the time with Measure 7 and the hearings that were going on, Senate Bill 863, this particular issue was placed on the back burner. So here we are with Senate Bill 432, which, as can be expected, will generate its share of opponents, such as, I would imagine, the Supreme Court. They probably don't want to add to the mountains of work they already produced for Oregonians. I think they had 61 decisions last year. This might actually force them to double that, perhaps. But I would suspect that the Oregon Supreme Court probably isn't real nuts about this. The governor. Senate Bill 432 takes away power from the governor, albeit not immediately, but it takes away the power of the governor to appoint referees and restores that power to the citizens of the state of Oregon, those people who are most directly impacted by the decisions of the LUBA referees. And the third person that probably going to oppose this are what I call habitual appellants. Those persons and groups who abuse the process, who abuse Goal 1 by appealing land use decisions just for the sake of appeal, have absolutely no impact on these people or effect on these appellants, but they use the land use process for something it was never intended to be used for. Delay, delay, delay. I'll give you an example. I represent a gentleman out in Prineville, just outside of Prineville in Crook County, who in 1999, that's 6 years ago now, he filed an application to partition off two 10-acre parcels from his 300-acre parcel, non-farm dwellings. Some folks who are about 5.5 miles away, actually I think one of them wasn't even in the county, appealed and appealed and appealed. I finally got a decision for him last August, and we're in the process now of the second application, which was approved by the local government. We had more public hearings than were required. They took into account all of the testimony. They approved the application with some conditions, and yet these same people appealed, and the purpose is delay, 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 and hopefully they can smoke these people out. These are people who aren't affected in any way, shape, or form by the creation of two non-farm parcels on property that can't grow rocks. But they did it for the sake of appeal, and that is not what Goal 1 was intended to be used for. who's going to benefit? Well, first I suggest the citizens of the state of Oregon, those people who are most impacted by the decisions of the LUBA referees. Give them an opportunity to have a say in their selection. I have every reason to believe that if given the opportunity, they probably select the three that we currently have. Number two, the property owners. Hopefully this will speed up their process. Remember, the longer it takes to get a decision out of the Oregon courts or the judiciary branch or whomever, the longer it takes for the family to build a home on their property. This measure will speed up that process and allow property owners, hopefully, to get a decision one way or the other and know what their rights are. And third group that are probably going to benefit, we hope, local governments. Less appeals means real savings for local governments and more certainty for the community. It just stands to reason. If you have less appeals, you'll more likely be able to save some money for local governments. It also ensures that citizens affected by a local government's decision are the people who get to decide what the community looks like. That's the end of my written comments. I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you. Any questions, committee? Ross, would you be willing to stick around in case the committee has some, ask you to respond to some of the other testimonies coming up?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim Just, please. Hi.
Good afternoon, Chair Atkinson, members of the committee. My name is Jim Just. I'm executive director of the Goal One Coalition, which is a statewide organization whose mission is to provide assistance and support to local citizens and to advocate for citizen involvement. The purpose of this bill is quite clearly is to limit participation in decisions affecting people's communities. Because it would limit participation to those who can establish that they're adversely affected. Well, that has certain pretty narrow legal meanings, which means you got to show that it has adverse effects on your practical. On your practical, what is it? Whatever the language is, it adversely affects your practical rights, and so we're trying to shut out a certain group of people and just saying you don't have the right to participate, even though it's your community, you live there, you're affected by how it grows, you're affected by the loss of forest land, by the loss of farmland, but. Because you don't have a specifically identifiable right, you don't get to play the game. This is, as a practical matter, it won't work. You can always find, it just changes the way the game is played. Rather than worrying about the merits of a decision, you're going to have to spend more time worrying about finding somebody who's going to have that specific kind of standing. So it's going to result in a greater expenditures of resources on things that are really peripheral to what we're talking about, which is making good decisions in our communities. So we urge you to reject this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Just. Are there citizens in Washington State that are rejected from due process as it relates to land use planning up there?
I know nothing about how this process works.
What about Idaho?
Or nothing about Idaho.
Kansas?
Either.
Do you know any other state besides Oregon?
No.
Because it seems to me that we have a nice monopoly of special interests that can really interfere with, that can appeal, I think, as the first gentleman said, appeal for the sake of appeal in Oregon and drive the cost of doing anything up with private property that's just...
I think
that's unfair.
I think the idea that somebody would appeal for the sake of appealing is simply ludicrous. I mean, who would want to do that? Oh. You don't appeal just to appeal. You appeal because you have some specific concerns and that you think something was done wrong. You're not going to appeal if you think you're going to lose. Nobody's going to waste that time and that energy and that money. Why would you do that? I think that's just an argument that doesn't make sense.
I think we have a different opinion. I think there's a lot of people, especially in the world of politics, and will appeal and sue and do all kinds of things just to wear down their opponent's time and money. I think it's unfortunate, but I think it happens all the time. Just my own personal opinion, but what do I know? Is there any other questions of the committee?
Thank you.
Call forward Ed Sullivan and Stephen Cafori, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. I have with me Ed Sullivan, who's perhaps the most preeminent land use lawyer in the state. He represents both local governments and private individuals, so he represents a spectrum of interests in the land use issues. And he has some comments that he'd like to present. He is the chair of the Legislative Policy Advisory Committee of the chapter, but is not today representing that organization because our organization doesn't meet till tomorrow morning and hasn't taken a formal position on this issue. So he's speaking on for himself.
Mr. Corey, is Mr. Sullivan going to read that entire binder that he has sitting
no.
at his lap?
This is called appealing, Mr. Chair, no. and driving the opponents crazy. No, we're not going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Atkinson, members of the committee. My name is Ed Sullivan, and although I'm chair of the American Planning Association Oregon Chapter Legislative and Policy Advisory Committee, I'm appearing on my own behalf as our chapter, as Mr. Cafori indicated, has not taken a position on these bills. On Senate Bill 431, by the way, I also, along with Dick Benner, am a member of the Periodic Review Committee. I will tell you, Vice Chair Atkinson, that there was no opposition to the proposal that Mr. Benner made in Senate Bill 431 on our committee. Regarding 432, committee should be aware that the proposal makes two changes in current law, as you've heard. The first is to supplant LUBA with the Land Use Court of Appeals as part of the Oregon Court of Appeals. The second is to change standing as to the requirement of an adverse effect. I drafted a bill for a land use court as a replacement for LUBA in 1981 when I represented Douglas County. LUBA was established on a temporary basis in 1979 as an experiment. My bill did not pass, and that year LUBA was made permanent. There were two primary reasons that the bill did not pass. The first is the cost of a new court and the fact that judges may be elected. You should have a legislative fiscal statement to deal with the cost issue. The election issue was a big one in 1981. As there were concerns that special interests, whether developers, conservationists, or property rights folks, would attempt to buy the election. On the 20th anniversary of LUBA, I did an article which was published in Willamette Law Review on the performance of LUBA and my evaluation of that performance. I did so in the usual criteria for evaluating administrative agencies: expertise, speed, and cost. Briefly and parenthetically to those three issues. Expertise, what we were faced with at the time in 1979 and 81 was the prospect that circuit courts would take back these decisions. Circuit courts have a variety of things to deal with, and the expertise issue confined to three people handling all land use matters for the state was seen then and now as a good thing. Speed was the second criteria. LUBA was given timelines to decide roughly within 150 days of the time the record was resolved to make its decisions. Very rarely has it exceeded those timelines, and there hasn't been any difficulty in the field on LUBA's time limits. The third issue is cost. Bringing matters to circuit court at that time was anywhere between 2 and 3 times the cost of going to LUBA. If you deal with a land use court of appeals as the sole arbiter of all land use decisions, you also deal with such things as enforcement, the problem of whether you should hold an evidentiary hearing on standing, on constitutionality under or on ex parte contacts. Those things are costly. Having a court will more likely make it more costly than keeping the current LUBA situation. I concluded that in my article that LUBA met each of these criteria and was a success story that other states should know about. I've been asked to testify in Washington State about the matter and have had inquiries from other states. I find really no reason to change a fairly good system. Finally, although APA hasn't taken a position on the standing issue formally, it has, through other people, expressed its concern to the Advisory Committee on Regulatory Permitting and opposed a contraction of standing. The reasons relate both to cost and practicality. First, having a standing fight causes both delay and cost for all parties, especially in that most appellants will find some way to get into court. Secondly, there isn't a major problem out there, and Mr. Mike Holston from LUBA behind me, and I take it will testify, I think will attest to that fact as well. Very few cases have been brought by those who haven't either of themselves or their organizations or their members are not adversely affected by a decision. The advisory committee appeared satisfied on these points, and I do not recommend proceeding with either part of this bill. I'd be happy to respond to your questions.
Thank you. Any questions? I have a quick question.
Sure.
The bill, as written, proposes to save 175 days, and you get that by eliminating review of the Court of Appeals.
That's correct.
Time savings, 161 days. Accelerating time to file petition for review, 14 days.
Yes.
In your analysis, could it be done quicker?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think it could be done quicker. Here's the counter to that, though, Senator, and that is that right now LUBA gets between 200 and 300 cases a year. About 30 of those go on to the Court of Appeals, and about less than 5 go on to the Supreme Court. It's the filtering system that really you're dealing with here. Most people are satisfied with a written opinion dealing with their issue that goes beyond the local government. If you filter everything into the appellate courts, you're going to add to the cost.
Thank you. How much does it cost to make an appeal initially?
I'm in private practice, and I think I tell my folks it will take you no less than $6,000, and it could go up to $15,000 to go to LUBA.
What about just the earlier discussion on appealing for the sake of appealing? Is that standard across Oregon, or is it by jurisdiction?
No, Oregon has one of the more liberals, is one of the more liberal states. I practice in this area nationally, and Oregon is more generous than most people. The standard citation is to say adversely affected or aggrieved. Adversely affected is what you know as the proposal in this bill. Aggrieved was decided by our Supreme Court to say you merely disagree with the decision below, and that's good enough to get you in.
So that's what you mean by liberal?
Yes.
Okay.
And what we did in a few years after that decision, which was in a case called Jefferson Landfill versus Marion County, is we codified that.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mary Kyle McCundy? McCurdy? Sorry. I thought that was N. Sorry about that.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Atkinson and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends of Oregon is opposed to this bill for the following reasons. First, the system is not broken, so why attempt to fix it? LUBA is currently and has been functioning quite well, as you've heard even from the proponent of this bill. The board provides a review body with a specialized knowledge of land use law, which results in decisions that are both consistent and delivered in a timely fashion. This is demonstrated by the fact that LUBA's decisions are rarely overturned on appeal to the Court of Appeals. Of those LUBA decisions appealed to the Court of Appeals, historically, 85% have been upheld. This has the beneficial effect, as Mr. Sullivan was just describing, of discouraging appeals beyond the LUBA level because it's unlikely that they'll be successful. The LUBA process is also quick and much faster than it would likely occur if it were enveloped in the Oregon state court system. 90% of LUBA's decisions are decided within the statutory time frame, which is 77 days from the date the record is submitted. Decision-making in this time frame provides certainty to both citizens and development interests alike and is good for the economy of the state. Here, unlike many states, development is not kept in legal limbo for many years, and you can do that in a court system as well as in the Land Use Board of Appeals system, and that does occur in many other states. Neither the Court of Appeals nor the Supreme Court has a history of decision-making, including on land use matters, in that time frame, and I know because I have decisions pending before those courts or before the Court of Appeals. The LUBA process is much more accessible to citizens. LUBA is both less expensive and more accessible to the average citizen than the court system. Citizens are not required to hire an attorney in order to appear and argue their case before LUBA. Does this mean that there is so-called abuse of the process by allowing more public participation? Not at all, and I challenge the proponents to show that this is a systematic problem. Of the estimated 10,000 to 15,000 land use decisions that are made by local governments each year, in the last decade, only about 180 to 270 appeals are filed each year. That's only 1 to 2% of all local land use decisions. This bill attempts to limit participation by individuals and organizations by limiting standing to those that are adversely affected. This narrows the current standing opportunities, as you've heard. Currently, to appeal a decision to LUBA, one must have participated in the decision-making process at the local level. Changing that standing requirement to adversely affected throws land use back to the state it was in prior to 1989, as Mr. Sullivan was describing. Prior to 1989, in order to have standing at LUBA, a petitioner was required to show that they were adversely or affected or aggrieved by the land use decision. So much time was wasted in litigation proving that someone was or was not adversely affected that eventually that standard was changed in 1989. Did this open the floodgates to appeals, frivolous appeals, or those that were filed merely to thwart development? No. Approximately the same percentage of local land use decisions have been appealed today as before. Only those individuals, organizations, and businesses that truly are concerned about a land use decision are going to take the time to both participate at the local level and appeal to a higher level. Participation and an appeal require a commitment of time and money that is going to virtually eliminate frivolous or obstructive appeals. We urge the committee to vote no on Senate Bill 432. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Again, I apologize. I thought that was an N. Thank you. Mike Holston.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I provided my copies of my written testimony earlier. I also provided copies of it to the proponent of Senate Bill 432 and to some of the opponents, and much of what I've said has already been said to you today. I'll proceed with this as you wish. My intent would be, and I want to point out initially, too, I was trying to remember that I think LUBA has not appeared before a committee to present testimony on a substantive piece of legislation in almost 20 years. And I received a call from your committee administrator last Friday who convinced me that by virtue of the subject matter of this, that it might be a good idea for me to break that tradition and be here today.
May I ask a quick question, though?
Sure.
Just as interested in the process. You've signed up as neutral. This isn't the judicial branch advocating on behalf of itself to the legislative branch, is it?
I signed up neutral because that was the only box that remotely resembled the position I would be taking today. I'm not going to take a position on this bill today. If the judicial branch is here, I'm going to let them speak for themselves about this bill. My intent today was only to be available as a resource for you.
It's for the record kind of process sensitive to. Sorry. Go ahead.
My purpose here today, like I said, I'm not going to be taking a position on the bill, but I am willing to go through and give you a brief overview of what LUBA looks like and some of the numbers that you've heard tossed around today. I can go over some of the numbers that have to do with the appeals that we've received over the years and how those appeals have been resolved, and make a point or two about the kinds of issues that we're facing today, if that's your desire.
Go ahead.
That would be helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. As others have pointed out to you, LUBA was created in 1979. Before LUBA was appointed, land use decisions were reviewed by the state circuit courts, and they were reviewed by LCDC hearings officers briefly. As you may know, we have a statutory system that requires local governments to make a decision on permits and rezoning decisions within 120 to 150 days, depending on the nature of the decision. Once that decision is rendered, there are a series of statutes that require that LUBA issue a final decision in any appeal of that decision within 77 days after the local record is filed. Following LUBA's decision, there are other statutes that require speedy appellate review. And those statutes, the two numbers that are contained in them, require that oral argument be held before the Court of Appeals within 49 days after LUBA files the record. And LUBA files the record in an appeal within 7 days after the appeal is filed. And then there's another statute that requires that the Court of Appeals issue its decision within 99 days after oral argument. As I understand the bill carries forward that appellate review process, but substitutes the Supreme Court for the Court of Appeals, but imposes identical requirements. LUBA review process, you've heard numbers tossed around. I don't know really what the source of these numbers. I hear estimates of any range all the way from 10,000 to 20,000 as a total number of local government land use decisions that are made each year. Whatever that number is, about 223 of them, right, exactly 223 of them, were appealed to LUBA in 2004. And I'll talk a little bit about how that number has varied over the years. The process that we follow at LUBA is very similar to the process that the Court of Appeals follows when it reviews state agency contested case orders. And I've attached an appendix, if you want to turn to that, it's Appendix B. And this is a series of boxes that describe steps along the way in a LUBA appeal process, and the shaded boxes give you the interval between each one of those steps. You know, starting with the box at the top on the left, we've got a local government's made a land use decision, and they give notice of that decision, and interested parties have 21 days to file an appeal of that decision to LUBA. And the standing issues that you've heard discussed would have an effect on that step of the process. Once that appeal is filed with LUBA, there's a 21-day deadline for the city or county to file its record. And once that record is filed, the 77-day deadline you've heard mentioned kicks in. And once that record's filed, LUBA is supposed, under the statutes, is supposed to issue a final decision within 77 days. The first event that has to happen in that 77-day period is there's 21 days for the petitioning party to file their brief, prepare their brief and file it. Following that, you've got another 21 days for the local government or the parties that are participating on behalf of the local government to file their brief. So you're 42 days into that 77-day period when the briefing is concluded. The process that we follow, we try to schedule oral argument as quickly as we can after that responding brief comes in, usually between 7 and 14 days. We conduct oral argument at LUBA, or occasionally we go out to the local governments and conduct oral arguments locally. And once that's completed, depending on how long it took us to schedule oral argument, we've got around 28 to 21 days to issue our final opinion. And that's the process. And once we issue our opinion, there's 21 days to appeal it to the Court of Appeals. Uh, to give you a picture of LUBA, when LUBA was created, it was a five-person agency. There were three board members anticipated at the beginning, and they had two administrative staff. And for much of LUBA's history, that was what it looked like. During the 1990s, the number of appeals increased dramatically. And for a brief period of time, LUBA was authorized a couple of staff attorneys. That structure changed a little bit. I do not recall which biennium it was, but finally we have evolved in the current biennium budget to the structure that we have now, which is a six-person agency. It's down from seven back to six. And we have three board members. We have one staff attorney. We have a paralegal that's kind of a performs a number of functions. I'll come back to that in a minute. And then we have administrative staff, the person that answers the phone and opens the mail and makes sure everything gets to where it's got to go and sends the opinions out, does all the administrative tasks of the agency. The paralegal does some of that too, but that position also is responsible for publishing our opinions and maintaining our web page. I've attached an organizational chart, but I'm not going to go into that unless you want me to. We have a series of performance measures. The two that we think are probably the most important, I'm going to talk briefly about. The first one measures the percentage of appeals that are issued within statutory deadlines. We have established a target of 90%, so you get 90% of our final opinions out within that statutory deadline, and we are currently meeting or exceeding that measure. There was a period of time in the 1990s when LUBA was not issuing, it was issuing only about 50% of its opinions within that statutory deadline, and it was missing the deadline by a large number of days in most cases. Current practice is, although we miss that deadline occasionally, we're only missing it by a few days in most cases. It's there is not the substantial delay that there was at one point. The second performance measure is the percentage of final opinions that are sustained on appeal. We've got a target of 85% for that figure, and we are meeting that target at present. The factors that affect the appellate process at LUBA, I've attached Appendix D. And that graphically shows you the fluctuation in the number of appeals that have been filed at LUBA over the years. LUBA was created in 1979. That's a partial year figure, so that's why that figure is low.
Can I ask a question? Does that in any way track with the economy?
Mr. Chair, I think it tracks pretty closely with the economy. The 90s were the boom years, and those were the boom years for the numbers of appeals at LUBA as well. You see one aberration in the year 2000. I say aberration because there was a factor that explains the spike of appeals in that year. And if you recall, that was the year Measure 7 was adopted, and there were lots of local ordinances passed to adopt procedures to respond to that measure. Over 50. And that almost entirely explains the spike there. But generally, after about 1997, the numbers of appeals had been dropping and began to drop more significantly with the recession in 2001. The numbers are on the rise again. We had 213 in 2003, and we had 223 last year. The other factor that's on the horizon for us and for a lot of people, I suppose, is ballot measure 37. There's a section in that measure that states that a decision by a governing body under measure 37 shall not be considered a land use decision. We've not had a case involving that language yet, but I think most people read that language to provide that those kinds of decisions are not going to be coming to LUBA. They'll be going, if they're going to be appealed, they'll be appealed somewhere else. The bigger question probably under Measure 37 is after we have a series of local government decisions that either waive regulations or pay compensation, the ultimate impact on that, on subsequent development and the legal issues that are going to attend in that area, presents an area of fairly significant legal uncertainty the way the bill's drafted now, and we have no idea how that's going to pan out. Our expectation is that overall Measure 37 is not going to have a very significant impact on LUBA. We have not adjusted our budget request based on Measure 37. Our anticipation is, though, it's quite likely that unless it's dramatically revised, that the net effect probably will be to increase our caseload. At that point, I'll stop. I'm available to answer any questions now that you may have or that may come up later. I'll plan to stay around.
Thank you very much. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. What happens if LUBA doesn't render a decision in that 77-day time period?
Vice Chair Atkinson, Senator Beyer, the short answer is there is a statute that allows parties to file a mandamus with the Marion County Circuit Court to order us to issue the opinion post-haste. To my knowledge, a mandamus like that's only been filed once. The reason parties generally don't do that is that the parties generally recognize that there's a reason why we have not met the 77-day deadline in a particular case. It generally happens in cases where we have novel legal issues. It's a very complex case factually. And generally the parties understand that we're doing our very best to get the opinion out as quickly as we can. And I that's just my guess, but I think that's why people generally don't file those mandamus requests.
Do you routinely, or when you see a potentially complicated case coming forward, do you ask both parties to waive the statutory requirement of time so that to give yourselves more time?
Chair Atkinson, Senator Beyer, we generally request at oral argument just to avoid having to place phone calls. We ask them for an additional 7 days if we need it. That is correct.
Thank you.
Real briefly, we heard from Mr. Sullivan that Oregon has very liberal policies in terms of who can appeal and whether or not they're directly, they are directly affected or if they just don't like it. I think that's layman's terms. Do you see in these trending of appeals, can you tell me if some of those, if that's accurate, are we too liberal? Do we have too many appeals that could be determined as frivolous, or can you not make such a statement? Maybe that's the most accurate question.
Chair Atkinson, members of the committee, I'm Mr. Sullivan's probably better equipped to compare the standing rule that we have in Oregon with other what hurdles may be in place in other jurisdictions. The standing requirement that we have right now, others have accurately described it. It requires that a person have appeared locally and taken a position on the merits of the case, and that can be either in writing or orally during some hearing. Once they've done that, as long as they file their appeal to LUBA on time, they have standing to appeal at LUBA. So that is the hurdle that they have to jump, and it's not a particularly high hurdle.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Liz Frankel.
Thank you very much. I apologize. I didn't realize that this was going to be actually a public hearing. I thought it was going to be more of a discussion. But I have been authorized to say that the League has...
You have to state your name.
Excuse me, Liz Frankel, League of Women Voters.
Thank you.
Of Oregon. I have been authorized to say that we do oppose this, whether you abolish LUBA or whatever language you want to use. Let me explain just a moment how the League members work in local communities. We have a strong position on issues, on land use issues. We strongly support the statewide land use planning program. Our members attend, they work on vision committees, on comprehensive plan rewrites. I'm currently sitting on a couple of these committees in Benton County on their steering committee for the comprehensive rewrite. They follow the process. Partly a part of this process to the league really sits on goal one, and that is the citizens' right to participate. And that's part of the land use planning process. Because of that provision, and our interpretation of that provision is that, and it says, in all aspects of the decision-making process, that would include the right to appeal if an organization feels that somewhere in the process there's been a glitch. Those things happen. Both sides may think they're right, but you take that, that's what the process is for. We recognize, because of goal one, we see our ability to go to LUBA as absolutely critical. And we also see that as league members, we believe that we have an organizational right. In other words, the league can appeal, not just an individual member. I think I could explain that in another way, and that is that from the league standpoint, we not only want to protect the right of an individual to appeal, but we see that there are groups like the league, organizations like the league, that have a public interest. We also have a right to appeal. We're very concerned with the loss of LUBA, which has been effective in terms of cost and efficient. We believe that this would be a very, very damaging situation. I'm here to express this opinion, and I will try to get you written testimony, which I normally do, at some subsequent point.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one other sign up, Mr. Tom Gallagher.
Mr. Chair and member of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Urban Developers Coalition. I was a member of the Advisory Committee on Regulatory Permitting, which meant through most of the summer. That committee was an offshoot of the Industrial Lands Bill 2011 that passed last session, and it was a companion piece to a bill on rules streamlining. The rules streamlining resulted in a bill this session, or House Bill 3120. The Advisory Committee on Regulatory Permitting did not draft a bill. We did divide ourselves into four work groups. The first work group was on speeding up permits. And we learned two major things in that permitting group. The first one was that, and we're talking mostly about larger development, big job projects. Most of the people, and many of the people involved in the committee were involved in consultants on siting and large developers, want to go in the jurisdictions that want them to come there. Fighting a battle, a land use battle, a permitting battle through a jurisdiction that's opposed to you is extremely difficult. We prefer to go into those jurisdictions that are looking to do the economic development and to work on siting the project. The second thing we learned in the permit group is that there is a problem with the timelines. And the problem with the timelines doesn't show up in the number of appeals or the number of cases, because it is the significant projects that get appealed. The big projects. Those are the ones that get caught up in a two-year timeline. Nationally, when companies are looking at Oregon, we're competing against other states that have totally different timelines and different processes in Oregon and total different finality to the permitting process and the land use process. Not to say you can't get caught up in some court cases in other states in different ways, but not quite the same way you do in Oregon. So we thought that it probably was important to put a work group together on the appeals process. Now, this was not a balanced work group. The people on the appeals work group were cities, counties, and developers. It didn't have a wide spectrum of folks, and it wasn't intended to have a wide spectrum of folks because we were just looking at what might work and not proposing legislation. We did look at the LUBA process in some detail. I might add that sitting through four work sessions with attorneys who are on all sides of this issue was one of the least pleasant experiences I had. They all are authoritatively sure of their position, and they are all different. And they couldn't come to any kind of an agreement. What we did do is review things like standing, like the level of fees, and we look at the fact that Oregon is probably the easiest place for an individual to get involved through the LUBA process in appealing a case. So we made no recommendations as to any changes that we should make in the process. We did have one advisory piece, which is similar to this bill, and it came from some of the attorneys on the group, and it was to change LUBA from a land use court to a magistrate court, to put it into the court system in hopes that the appellate process would get, they would get some deference from the appellate process and we could get some finality on the LUBA decisions. But I will say, going back and putting the different pieces together, we learned there are two kinds of appeals. And I made a joke, and it's a bad joke, but I'll still repeat it here, that there ought to be two sign-up sheets at the door. One for those people that had a problem, a glitch as it's been described, or something like that, or somebody who didn't like a piece of it, a fixable piece. And so when those people signed up and testified inside of the process, usually you can work that out. You can change some aspect of the development, where the driveways are, how high the walls are, how much traffic, and how you handle the traffic. If it is something that can be worked out, most of the time it requires the developer to bring some money to the table, but most of the time on those can be worked out, and that process, the process works very well for that. All of the people should get involved as early as possible, should get all of their issues out at the local level, and we should work through solving them. There's a second group. And those are the people who really just go through the process for the purpose of perfecting their standing because they're opposed to the process, they're opposed to the project, and they're going to oppose it from here to the beginning to the end. And they don't have a piece of it that you can work out. Sometimes they disagree on whether or not the comprehensive land use change is a good one. They disagree on the outcome. And that's legitimate. If people have a different... it's just usually one bring a big box store in on the east side of Burnside or west side of Burnside. I mean, that's a legitimate debate to have locally. And so I don't have a fault with that. Other people are just simply opposed to the project. They don't want it near their home. They don't like the land use. The city and the county can agree. They can be an individual that signs up with some other individuals. They can hire an attorney. They can use the process to stop the project or to delay the process to such an extent and drive the costs upon it and become prohibitive or people drop off. One of the cases we looked at in the work group was Sumitomo and McMinnville. Now, that has two aspects of it. It has people who were opposed to putting a large project like that because of transportation problems out, and not McMinnville, Newburgh, out there. And it also had particular individuals who just plain disagreed with that project, period. Now, when we went through the advisory committee, we came up with no legislative recommendations to you. I think that my advice here is that you should take a look at the 3120 report in the appendices, which talked about the magistrate court idea. You should take a little bit of a look at this one. You should ask maybe the groups to sit down under your direction and see if there isn't a way that we can speed up the process. One of the most frustrating things to me was that all of the lawyers for the developers, the lawyers for the cities, and the lawyers for the citizen groups, all agreed that the LUBA process we put together is about as fast and as efficient as we can do. And if that's it, If we can't get any more creative than that in terms of moving a process through and having people get involved who need to get involved to get it fixed, then our land use process is a significant detriment to some of the major jobs programs that we'd like to bring to the state that require some sort of a comprehensive land use change. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
I don't have any.
Okay. I don't see anybody else on the list, is there?
I mean, these folks are here for the court.
Okay. Does anybody from the court need to add anything? Anybody else want to testify on this informational public hearing? I guess is what it technically is called. All right. We'll close it. Any other business come for the committee? We're done.
Okay.